Chapter 28. Uplifted, as it were poised in the air, but soberly, with my feet on the ground, and my mind trying to penetrate her intention. As he had turned to Razumov. Well, this is the place. Yes, it is here that I meant you to come. I have been walking every day. Don't excuse yourself, I understand. I am grateful to you for coming today, but all the same I cannot stay now. It is impossible. I must hurry off home. Yes, even with you standing before me, I must run off. I have been too long away. You know how it is? These last words were addressed to me. I noticed that Mr. Razumov passed the tip of his tongue over his lips just as a parched, feverish man might do. He took her hand in its black glove, which closed on his, and held it detained it quite visibly to me against a drawing back movement. Thank you once more for understanding me, she went on warmly. He interrupted her with a certain effect of roughness. I didn't like him speaking to this frank creature, so much from under the brim of his hat, as it were. And he produced a faint, rasping voice quite like a man with a parched throat. What is there to thank me for? Understand you? How did I understand you? You had better know that I understand nothing. I was aware that you wanted to see me in this garden. I could not come before. I was hindered. And even today, you see. Late. She still held his hand. I can, at any rate, thank you for not dismissing me from your mind as a weak emotional girl. No doubt I want sustaining. I am very ignorant. But I can be trusted. Indeed I can. You are ignorant, he repeated thoughtfully. He had raised his head, and was looking straight into her face now, while she held his hand. They stood like this for a long moment. She released his hand. Yes. You did come late. It was good of you to come on the chance of me having loitered beyond my time. I was talking with this good friend here. I was talking of you. Yes, Kirillo Sidorovich, of you. He was with me when I first heard of your being here in Geneva. He can tell you what comfort it was to my bewildered spirit to hear that news. He knew I meant to seek you out. It was the only object of my accepting the invitation of Peter Ivanovich. Peter Ivanovich talked to you of me, he interrupted, in that wavering, hoarse voice which suggested a horribly dry throat. Very little. Just told me your name, and that you had arrived here. Why should I have asked for more? What could he have told me that I did not know already from my brother's letter? 3 lines. And how much they meant to me. I will show them to you one day, Kirillo Sidorovich. But now I must go. The first talk between us cannot be a matter of 5 minutes, so we had better not begin. I had been standing a little aside, seeing them both in profile. At that moment it occurred to me that Mr. Razumov's face was older than his age. If Mother the girl had turned suddenly to me were to wake up in my absence so much longer than usual, she would perhaps question me. She seems to miss me more, you know, of late. She would want to know what delayed me, and, you see, it would be painful for me to dissemble before her. I understood the point very well. For the same reason she checked what seemed to be on Mr. Razumov's part a movement to accompany her. No. I go alone, but meet me here as soon as possible. Then to me in a lower, significant tone, Mother may be sitting at the window at this moment, looking down the street. She must not know anything of Mr. Razumov's presence here till something is arranged. She paused before she added a little louder, but still speaking to me, Mr. Razumov does not quite understand my difficulty, but you know what it is. V, with a quick inclination of the head for us both, and an earnest friendly glance at the young man, Miss Alden left us covering our heads and looking after her straight, supple figure receding rapidly. Her walk was not that hybrid and uncertain gliding affected by some women, but a frank, strong, healthy movement forward. Rapidly she increased the distance, disappeared with suddenness at last. I discovered only then that Mr. Razumov, after ramming his hat well over his brow, was looking me over from head to foot. I dare say I was a very unexpected fact for that young Russian to stumble upon. I caught in his physiognomy, in his whole bearing, an expression compounded of curiosity and scorn, tempered by alarm, as though he had been holding his breath while I was not looking. But his eyes met mine with a gaze direct enough. I saw then for the first time that they were of a clear brown color and fringed with thick black eyelashes. They were the youngest feature of his face. Not at all unpleasant eyes. He swayed slightly, leaning on his stick and generally hung in the wind. It flashed upon me that in leaving us together Miss Alden had an intention, that something was entrusted to me, since, by a mere accident I had been found at hand. On this assumed ground I put all possible friendliness into my manner. I cast about for some right thing to say, and suddenly in Miss Alden's last words I perceived the clue to the nature of my mission. "No," I said gravely, if with a smile, "you cannot be expected to understand." His clean-shaven lip quivered ever so little before he said, as if wickedly amused, "But haven't you heard just now?" I was thanked by that young lady for understanding so well. I looked at him rather hard. Was there a hidden and inexplicable sneer in this retort? No. It was not that. It might have been resentment. Yes. But what had he to resent? He looked as though he had not slept very well of late. I could almost feel on me the weight of his unrefreshed, motionless stare, the stare of a man who lies unwinking in the dark, angrily passive in the toils of disastrous thoughts. Now, when I know how true it was, I can honestly affirm that this was the effect he produced on me. It was painful in a curiously indefinite way for, of course, the definition comes to me now, while I sit writing in the fullness of my knowledge. But this is what the effect was at that time of absolute ignorance. This new sort of uneasiness which he seemed to be forcing upon me, I attempted to put down by assuming a conversational easy familiarity. That extremely charming and essentially admirable young girl, "I am, as you see, old enough to be frank in my expressions," was referring to her own feelings. "Surely you must have understood that much?" He made such a brusque movement that he even tottered a little. "Must understand this. Not expected to understand that. I may have other things to do. And the girl is charming and admirable. Well, and if she is, I suppose I can see that for myself." This sally would have been insulting if his voice had not been practically extinct, dried up in his throat, and the rustling effort of his speech too painful to give real offense. I remained silent, checked between the obvious fact and the subtle impression. It was open to me to leave him there and then, but the sense of having been entrusted with a mission, the suggestion of Miss Alden's last glance, was strong upon me. After a moment of reflection I said, "Shall we walk together a little?" He shrugged his shoulders so violently that he tottered again. I saw it out of the corner of my eye as I moved on, with him at my elbow. He had fallen back a little, and was practically out of my sight, unless I turned my head to look at him. I did not wish to indispose him still further by an appearance of marked curiosity. It might have been distasteful to such a young and secret refugee from under the pestilential shadow hiding the true kindly face of his land. And the shadow, the attendant of his countrymen, stretching across the middle of Europe, was lying on him too, darkening his figure to my mental vision. "Without doubt," I said to myself, "he seems a somber, even a desperate revolutionist. But he is young, he may be unselfish and humane, capable of compassion, of..." I heard him clear gratingly his parched throat, and became all attention. "This is beyond everything," were his first words. "He is beyond everything. I find you here, for no reason that I can understand, in possession of something I cannot be expected to understand. A confidant. A foreigner. Talking about an admirable Russian girl. Is the admirable girl a fool, I begin to wonder? What are you at? What is your object?" He was barely audible, as if his throat had no more resonance than a dry rag, a piece of tinder. It was so pitiful that I found it extremely easy to control my indignation. When you have lived a little longer, Mr. Razumov, you will discover that no woman is an absolute fool. I am not a feminist, like that illustrious author, Peter Ivanovich, who, to say the truth, is not a little suspect to me. He interrupted me, in a surprising note of whispering astonishment. Suspect to you. Peter Ivanovich suspect to you. To you, yes, in a certain aspect he is, I said, dismissing my remark lightly. As I was saying, Mr. Razumov, when you have lived long enough, you will learn to discriminate between the noble trustfulness of a nature foreign to every meanness, and the flattered credulity of some women. Though even the credulous, silly as they may be, unhappy as they are sure to be, are never absolute fools. It is my belief that no woman is ever completely deceived. Those that are lost leap into the abyss with their eyes open, if all the truth were known. Upon my word, he cried at my elbow, what is it to me, whether women are fools or lunatics? I really don't care what you think of them. I am not interested in them. I let them be. I am not a young man in a novel. How do you know that I want to learn anything about women? What is the meaning of all this? The object, you mean, of this conversation, which I admit I have forced upon you in a measure. Forced. Object. He repeated, still keeping half a pace or so behind me. Who wanted to talk about women, apparently? That's a subject. But I don't care for it. I have never. In fact, I have had other subjects to think about. I am concerned here with one woman only, a young girl, the sister of your dead friend Miss Alden. Surely you can think a little of her. What I meant from the first was that there is a situation which you cannot be expected to understand. I listened to his unsteady footfalls by my side for the space of several strides. I think that it may prepare the ground for your next interview with Miss Alden, if I tell you of it. I imagine that she might have had something of the kind in her mind when she left us together. I believe myself authorized to speak. The peculiar situation I have alluded to has arisen in the first grief and distress of Victor. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.